You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Longtime WNYC listeners will remember Tony Schwartz as a media pioneer who used a tape recorder the same way that a documentary filmmaker uses a camera. From 1945 to 1976, he was the producer and host of Around New York, a radio program on the station that showcased the sounds and voices that embodied our city. He also worked as a media consultant and was probably best known for the famous Daisy ad from Lyndon Johnson's 1964 presidential campaign. This Thursday, the Anthology Film Archives will feature his work in a program called Audio Verite Presents, Tony Schwartz and the Sounds of His City. And here to talk about the event are its presenter, Matt Barton, the curator of recorded sound at the Library of Congress, and its programmer, Andrew Lambert, who is an archivist for the Anthology Film Archives. Welcome to our show.
Hi.
Nice to be here.
He was one of the prides of this station, and he appeared as a guest on our show once to talk about his career. When did you become aware of Tony Schwartz and his sound recordings? So let's begin with you, Matt.
Probably, and I think this happened to many people, when I came across a copy of New York 19 among some used albums, and that would be, at least 20, 25 years ago.
Because he put out a lot of albums of the sounds that he collected.
Yes, mostly with folkways, although one of the most famous was the album of his recorded conversations with New York taxi drivers, which came out in Columbia in 1959.
But if you wanted the sound of a pile driver in New York, for example, there it was.
Mm-hmm.
And what about you, Andrew?
I was digging around in Anthology's basement and found a 16-millimeter print of the Daisy ad, which I had seen before, and of course it's legendary. But I watched it again and started doing more research and discovered the name of Tony Schwartz. And as I learned more about him, I realized that I actually had Tony Schwartz records in my record collection because I like to collect, sometimes often strange or found sounds.
And the baby ad, the Daisy ad had children's voices on it. This is one of his fields of expertise, getting kids to talk.
It's one of his innovations, actually. He loved to record children. Including his own children and members of the family. But when he got into advertising in the late 50s, the convention was to have, on radio anyway, was to have children voiced by adult females who would sort of put on a childish mm-hmm. voice. And I guess the thought was that you just couldn't depend on young children to do the right thing for you. And he proved otherwise. He was very good with children and got wonderful things out of them. So, that really drew on one of his strengths.
Although he did all this with some severe handicaps, didn't he? Wasn't he agoraphobic?
Yes, he was. Years before he started recording, he also suffered an episode of blindness, which lasted several months, which I guess makes one a good deal more sensitive to sound even after he recovered. He did suffer from agoraphobia. I think his passion for recording in the streets of New York was one of the things that helped him deal with it.
Well, how do you do that if you're afraid to go more than a few blocks from your home and you're trying to collect the sounds of the city? Do you just collect the sounds of your block?
Well, he did that, and his neighborhood and adjacent neighborhoods. He was often in the company of his wife, Rena. He could go a lot further afield when she was with him. But, in the years before they married, I guess he had to really, motivate himself and get out there. But proof is in what he recorded.
Well, he recorded the voices of some famous people over the length of his career, including Woody Guthrie, Martin Luther King Jr., Jimmy Carter, but he had to convince them all to come to his house.
Yeah.
Very often, yeah.
Well, Andrew, I can understand running a series on cinema verite at the Anthology Film Archive, but how does a movie theater present something called audio verite?
It's a program that we've been doing for at least 5 years now, and periodically on our quarterly calendars it'll appear. And usually, rather than reaching out to the Library of Congress and Matt, where the repository of Tony's tapes resides, we go into our own collection, which has a few thousand tapes of interviews, question and answer sessions, radio interviews that were recorded off air, And we invite the audience to come and sit in the theater, which is usually darkened, and listen. Previous programs have included the voice of Maya Deren giving lectures in the 1950s on her works, an interview from 1969 on the radio with Anthology's founder Jonas Mankus, his brother Adolphus, the filmmaker Shirley Clarke, and a young Martin Scorsese, who declares himself an underground filmmaker, talking about independent film and the rise of the underground in New York City. So we have these programs and people come in and sort of know what they're getting into, which is really the dark.
Well, didn't Tony Schwartz sometimes present his work on a stage as art performance with visual components?
I don't know about the visual components so much. He frequently did appear at places like Museum of Modern Art and also organizations and venues around the city to present his recordings, you know, and to be there as, you know, a live host for them. You know, one of his most poignant recordings, I think, is he went to the Jewish Guild for the Blind and interview to present sounds, and ended up interviewing people there about their favorite sounds.
And that was interesting because we also got into New York accents and and accents.
Yes, yes.
And maybe maybe we can play a little bit of that.
My name is Jimmy Palizzi, and I like the sound of church bells.
My name is Sophie McConaughey. Yes. I love the sound of children playing and of music.
My name is Anna Rabinovich. Yes. And I like the boats. Just very, very much I like the boats.
No, we don't hear people saying boids too much anymore.
Well, that's like that kind of inversion. Very, very much I like the birds.
And then also on the LP that Matt mentioned before, the New York Taxi Driver, it's New York, you know, cab drivers. It's accents you don't hear anymore.
And you hear the generations of the accents, too, because they're similar, but they vary, you know, depending on how old someone was.
One of the things that's amazing when you listen to the interviews is how genuine the responses would be to his simple questions. He must have had something about him that just made people trust him and be willing to open up to him.
Yeah, and again, this is a man who had problems leaving the house, and I really think it was a love of recording, but also a love of sounds and a love of people that helped him deal with it. And it really is striking how quickly people open up to him.
His entire catalog of work was acquired by the Library of Congress in 2007, just a year before he died.
Yes.
Were you involved in that acquisition?
No, I was at the library at the time, but as a sound engineer, I became curator in 2008, actually days after Tony Schwartz died. And my last assignment working as an engineer in the lab had been transferring his tapes. I've been doing that for 2 or 3 months at the time I became curator.
So these are all reel-to-reel tapes?
Yes, although there are many cassettes as well. I work with the reel-to-reels.
And what years did they cover?
That batch was mainly from about 56 to 66.
Did he categorize them, or was it just a big jumble that you had to put together?
It was kind of a jumble, but that was partly because we'd had some requests from researchers who had very specific interests. He was doing this. He had a weekly installment here on WNYC, so, you know, those were all on reels. And then there were other reels which had raw recordings or compilations or early versions of programs and records he was trying out.
He was using, I guess, a reel-to-reel initially that he could carry around before there was were cassette recorders. Today it would be a lot easier with digital recording.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But he had one of the first available portable tape recorders starting in about 1948.
My guests are Matt Barton and Andrew Lampert. We're talking about Audio Verite presents Tony Schwartz and the sounds of his city, which will be presented this Thursday, 7:30, at the Anthology Film Archives. And we will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. We're back with Matt Barton, who's the event presenter of a thing called Audio Verite Presents Tony Schwartz and the Sounds of His City. He's the curator of recorded sound at the Library of Congress, and Andrew Lampert is the event programmer and archivist at the Anthology Film Archives in the village, in the East Village, should we say?
Yeah, you could say that, 2nd Avenue, 2nd Street.
And the event will be taking place this Thursday, the 19th at 7:30 at the Anthology Film Archives. Maybe before we go much further, we should let Tony Schwartz introduce himself with one of his own recordings.
Good morning. Have you ever thought what you'd record with a tape recorder if you had a portable tape recorder? Well, last weekend, I met a group of young people from the South, and they were interested in learning to tape record. And I asked them what they'd like to record. I was interested in two realms, one in terms of sound, and two in terms of people. And here are their answers to the sounds they would like to record.
The sounds of rain on a roof and when you're laying in bed and listening to it.
I used to have a great fear of the sound of a hooting owl. I used to have a superstitious feeling about it. I was afraid to hear one when he's way across, you know, in the woods, and he hoo, things like that. I was afraid of it. I would like to have that sound now to listen to it because I don't have that fear anymore.
The stereo. So I would like to hear where you could play it and you could hear people walking all upstairs and the sound is right down here.
I really love the sound of the ocean and just the wind blowing in the ocean.
We heard him start off with good morning, which he started off all of these things with good morning.
He appeared on a morning classical music program.
And then he would end them with see you soon.
Yeah, I wonder about that because who was he seeing?
Right.
Well, it was kind of what it suggests is that he had felt a kind of a personal connection to his audience. How did the two of you wind up putting this thing together, Andrew?
Well, I visited the Library of Congress in Culpeper, Virginia with my wife a few years ago, and as we were being toured around this just giant facility.
Yeah, I should say this is a people are familiar with the library on Capitol Hill. This is a new facility, the Packard Campus for Audiovisual Preservation, that was opened about 3 years ago. And it's where the library's audiovisual collections are stored, preserved, and transferred.
And as we were walking around in one room, you know, it seemed in memory almost like a football field, were tapes upon tapes upon tapes with very interesting and also completely mundane attributions on the side. And I asked, what is this collection? And they mentioned Tony Schwartz, and a bell rung in my head. And I brought in today.
What do you mean by mundane?
Oh, I mean like a street corner or something that, like sounds of a dripping faucet or a laundry machine.
Car horns.
Car horns. I mean, very, very simple descriptors. And I've been collecting his records over the years, and as well as his two books, The Responsive Chord and Media, The Second God. Became more and more fascinated and reached out to Matt and the library about presenting a program, especially felt that it was a great idea to do in New York City, which is such a prominent subject in all of the material.
He's interested in capturing endangered sounds. And one remarkable thing about his recordings is that he often preserved endangered sounds before he could have known that they were going to go extinct. For instance, let's listen to this clip from a piece he did called On Subway.
The sound we are listening to now is the sound of people putting their 15-cent tokens into the turnstiles and entering our city's underground railroad.
Yeah.
Well, he knew the token price would go up. He didn't know we'd wind up with Metro cards. In one recording that'll be featured in Thursday's program, you hear only media theorist Marshall McLuhan asking Tony to record the sound of what he describes as an old steel-rimmed wagon wheel going down a New York cobble street. Did people often request that he record certain sounds?
I'm sure everybody had an idea about what he ought to record, and I think McLuhan probably found this too, that Schwartz had already recorded it. They did not meet until the mid-60s, by which time Schwartz had been recording for close to 20 years. And I've seen pictures of him from the 1950s with men who were still plying their trade from horse carts.
Mm-hmm. But he must have known that if he didn't do it, this is kind of like somebody with a camera who says, gee, that blacksmith shop is going
to
close.
Sure. There's an obsessive quality to this, which I also appreciate. And it makes me think of another person in the collection of anthology, which is the filmmaker Harry Smith, mm-hmm. who we have hours and hours and days of tapes of him recording the sounds outside of Allen Ginsberg's window or in a flophouse hotel on the Bowery. And all you can hear are bums coughing. And why people do this, I can't necessarily say, but they must think of the future value of this.
Well, in one case, he recorded a one-time moving sculpture exhibit at MoMA, the Jean Tinguely self-destructing sculpture.
Yes, I think it's Tinguely. He actually popped up in the New York Times a few weeks ago. It's a well-remembered piece.
We are listening to the actual sounds of a piece of sculpture called Homage to New York. It came to life by design on March 18, 1960, in the garden of the Museum of Modern Art in New York, and there, on the same date, it died, also by design.
Well, obviously he was interested in musicality, and he developed a relationship with musicians, didn't he, including Jimmy Giuffre, the jazz clarinetist, and the eccentric street musician who called himself Moondog. How did he incorporate music into his recordings?
Well, often simply as a part of street life. But he did do albums that were devoted entirely to street musicians. There's one called Millions of Musicians. I think Moondog made his first appearance on a Schwartz recording in 1954 on the album New York 19, which was the old postal code for Schwartz's neighborhood in the West 50s. And it's a piece of him performing with foghorns from the Hudson in the background. And there it's simply presented as being part of the neighborhood that was sort of Moondog's beat, that general area.
At the time, Moondog was considered just some eccentric. And then people started listening to the music and realized that he was an important composer.
Yeah, yeah.
And now people are still playing his compositions.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And he actually lived long enough to, reap some benefit from it. He spent the last 20 or 30 years of his life in Europe, only came back to New York once or twice, but did very well.
And people realized that these were compositions and not necessarily just improvisations by a guy wearing a Viking helmet. They're compositions that can be performed by others.
You mentioned the Viking helmet. He did dress rather strangely, I guess to call attention to himself. And instead of trying to pursue a music career as so many would have, get other musicians to play the work and go to concert halls, he stood on the street and played his music and then tried to sell sheet music.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and also he was something of a philosopher. Tracks that he had written. I think the street was his steadiest gig. Didn't make him a whole lot of money. He did get to do some concerts at Town Hall and other places around New York. But the street was his steadiest gig for a long time.
Do either of you have favorite Tony Schwartz recordings?
Certainly that one of Moondog with the foghorns is
too
is
bad
one
we
of
don't
them.
Have that queued up here.
Oh, okay.
Well, I think mine is probably one that a lot of people would cite, which is Nancy Grows Up, which is an audio portrait of his niece from being a very small baby into her teenage years. And it's this, which a lot of his recordings do, encapsulating time. He's able to shrink this span of time to about, 2.5 minutes?
Yeah, maybe a little more.
Yeah.
His programs were rarely more than 5 minutes in length.
And it just cuts from her at various ages, from prelingual to talking about ultimately how does she look and the boys who are she's going out to see.
Well, these are almost like films, except that they're on tape. I think of something like Jiga Vertov or capturing the sights of the city, in this case the sounds of the city, and and making connections.
Sort of city symphonies.
Very much so. I mean, he was a brilliant editor, the way he mixed things together, you know, to tell a story and also to find the inherent music in a child's voice or in sounds that most people would find unmusical.
Was he the first one to do this? Because I think since then we've had a lot of people who have done this kind of work.
Well, it certainly fits in with a lot of experimentation that have been going on, I think, you know, since the 20s and before, you know, incorporating airplanes and mechanical sounds and into compositions, and as well as people were recording sound effects and oral histories and making field recordings the way the Lomaxes did. But, you know, he brought his own sensibility to it and a particular focus.
And I suspect that some of the things that he captured, some of the sounds he captured, are impossible to reproduce now.
You can't go back to those times. And you know, it's the subway sound today wouldn't even sound the same, mm-hmm. as we heard before.
If we want to know what the subway sounded like then, we have to go to his recordings. I hope that somebody's out there recording what the subway is like today, because we assume that what we have in the present is what's always going to be.
Yeah, and it doesn't work out that way.
Not at all.
Does it?
I want to thank the both of you so much for being with us. We've been talking about Tony Schwartz, who was a mainstay here at WNYC. His Around New York was broadcast from 1945 to 1976. And is something that we're particularly proud of, that we had him here for all those years. He started the same year that Oscar Brand started.
Yeah, which is just incredible to think.
And Oscar Brand is still going
He's
strong.
He's still with us. The Audio Verite presents Tony Schwartz and the Sounds of His City will be presented on Thursday, May 19th. That's this coming Thursday at 7:30 at the Anthology Film Archives. You want to give us the address?
32 Second Avenue. It's the corner of Second Avenue and Second Street.
And my great thanks to Andrew Lampert, who's the event programmer, archivist at the Anthology Film Archives, and to Matt Barton, event presenter and curator of recorded sounds at the Library of Congress. It's
Thank
been
you.
A pleasure talking with you.
Thank you very
great
much.
Great to be here.